It has been quite baffling for the last more than a year since Donald Trump made his announcement that he was going to build a border wall. And yeah, like you just said, it one already exists. And the border wall, the actual physical barrier on the actual international boundary line is about 700 miles long. It is accompanied by a strategy. The strategy is called prevention through deterrence. So the idea is that the wall, along with a concentration of agents, along with a concentration of surveillance technologies, be concentrated in areas, traditional crossing areas, for people coming north, migrants coming north. And thus, they will avoid those heavily policed areas and be funneled into more desolate, dangerous, isolated places like the Arizona desert, which, according to the strategy, is supposed to be a deterrence because it's because actually, if you look at the first policy papers, it says because it's mortal. So they could, it's almost considered like those desolate areas are supposed to be a part of the wall, so to speak. So you have the walls, you have this with the logic of a prevention through deterrence strategy, and that's been in place since the early 1990s. And since that time, what we've seen in the last 25 years is a historic growth of the border enforcement apparatus. It's gone from practically no walls to 700 miles of walls, from 4,000 Border Patrol agents to almost 22 or 23,000 agents, there's Customs and Border Protection, which is the parent agency of the Border Patrol, which also has an air and marine division, so it has airplanes and boats that patrol the border as well, and that's more than 60,000 agents, which is the largest law enforcement agency in the country, and you have budgets that have gone from about $1.5 billion annual for border and immigration enforcement in the early 1990s to an annual budget of fiscal year 2016, it was about $19.5 billion, so a 12-fold increase. So there's been this kind of astronomical bolstering, or historic bolstering of the border, and now it's as you mentioned at the beginning. It's multifaceted. The actual wall is one part of this strategy. The strategy is prevention through deterrence, but it's also layered. So there's layers of border, and if you look at the southwest border, these layers of border go 100 miles inland in some places. So literally, it's no longer a borderline with just the wall, and that's one of the misconceptions one would have, like listening to, Donald Trump for the last year. Oh, it's just this border wall on this line. No, it's actually much more. It's much more sinister. It's much more prevalent. It's much more. You can't, if you're in this 100-mile zone, it's hard to go places without having to always be either in the eye of Homeland Security or even stopped and interrogated by Homeland Security or stopped at one of the Homeland Security checkpoints.
Yeah, it's more than just a physical barrier. It's a militarized zone, in effect.
Yeah.
You had a great line in your article that I'd like to read back to you. It's, for all practical purposes, the Great Wall that Trump talks about may, by January 2017, be as antiquated as the Great Wall of China. The 21st century border is no longer just about walls. It's about biometrics and drones. I thought that really just captured what you're describing perfectly.
Yeah, and that's really what it's about now. I don't even think Trump necessarily is doing this on purpose, but it's actually a massive act of deception. Here we are contemplating something like a Great Wall of China, right? While what's actually being deployed on the ground are this kind of 21st century sophisticated technology. You have the drones, for example. You have Predator B drones, the same kind of drones that are used abroad in U.S. military operations that are doing surveillance missions over the borderlands. You have, biometrics, as you just mentioned, biometrics like facial recognition, retina, the sort of big brother database technology that should really, anyone who's been following like the Snowden revelations and that and the National Security Agency, it's like the in your face version of the federal government going into your emails, except they're just taking pictures of you as you drive down the road. You have a whole other border situation which can no longer you can't conceive of it as just a line anymore. It's much thicker. It's much more connected to a broader surveillance state, I would argue.
And what's driven all of this change on the border? And what did it look like 30 years ago, 100 years ago? And
yeah, 30 years ago. If you just follow the kind of history of the U.S. Border Patrol, the Border Patrol didn't even exist until 1924. And then from 1924 to 1994, you had a slow but steady increase. So it went from a couple hundred agents to about 4,000 agents total. If you go back to what they call the old timers, they would often complain about not having enough resources. There was just south of where I live in Tucson and Nogales, the wall was a chain link fence. The chain link fence had holes in it. I have a good friend who grew up on the Mexican side of the border, and he always tells stories about going through the holes in the chain link fence to go play basketball with his cousins or his friends, or to go pay the bill at Jen's or whatever, just to do normal errands. Mainly because, as Nogales, like every single other border town, these are areas where they're very deep familial community ties between both sides of the border. So in the early 1990s, when these operations first happened, the operations were called Hold the Line, Gatekeeper, Safeguard, Rio Grande, and these operations were meant to really seal off the actual urban areas. So the first thing that really changed drastically were like urban areas like San Diego or San Ysidro, Nogales, Douglas, El Paso. All of a sudden, there's a upsurge in concentration of agents right on the borderline. Then they started building the walls, and then they started putting in the technologies. And that's how it started in the early 1990s. And there was an upsurge of resources and budgets towards the late 1990s. But really in the post 9/11 era is when you saw these astronomical increases in budget. And that's where you saw the kind of strategy move away from just the urban areas into more rural areas. So the expansion of the border wall, like it was expanded in 2006, there was 650 miles of border wall built in that year, expanding into many rural areas. You saw expansion of the Border Patrol into those different areas as well. And that's when you started seeing more and more and more technology. More checkpoints too, the kind of roadside checkpoints where everyone's forced to stop and be possibly interrogated by Homeland Security. And now what's going on is this kind of building, what's going on in Arizona right now, and it probably will be border-wide, is that they're building what they call a virtual wall, which is another layer of border about 15 miles inland. And the main company that got the contract was Elbit Systems. Elbit Systems is an Israeli company who's in charge of the border technology in Israel. And they got a contract in 2014. So they're building surveillance towers side by side, kind of like agents, almost like robots, right? But with sophisticated cameras that can see 7 miles away, with radar, with feeds that will go into operational control rooms where agents will be looking at monitors. So they'll get the feeds from these surveillance towers, they'll get the feeds from the drones, and there's 12,000 motion sensors, implanted motion sensors, along the 2,000-mile U.S.-Mexico border, And if somebody, so if somebody trips one of the sensors, it'll, an alarm sound will go off. And so the whole idea is what they call situational awareness, in which, you know, you have this kind of technological fortress that bolsters this idea of wall. And that's what I would argue. When you think of a wall right now, and today, you know, in the 21st century border, you have to start thinking of these technological layers and this kind of privatized technological layer of border.
Do you think that the lobbying of private security companies has driven the escalation on the border at all?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I would answer yes, for sure. I wouldn't say that's the only reason, but that's definitely a reason. If you look at the companies that are, you know, Elbit Systems, for example, that's a huge military monolith from Israel. We have 12,000 employees with a huge lobbying arm. So they, you know, we're talking about some big companies like the Boeing Corporation had the contract for this virtual wall before. All these, you know, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, all these different companies are now getting border security or homeland security applications to their, like, the military products they were manufacturing. And so, yeah, it's, when you talk to people, this is like one of the new markets. It's, you know, when I first started doing this research, doing a lot of the research on this kind of technological industries was in about 2010, 2011, and I've been going to trade shows ever since. And especially in those 2010, 2011, 2012, a lot of people in these trade shows, from vendors to officials to, you know, just about everyone, they were saying that, you know, as wars were starting to wind down in other places like Iraq and Afghanistan, they were looking for other new markets, and this huge new market was border security. And if you look at, you know, you could go and look at the different projections that are made in this border security market, and, you know, one of them I just saw said that it was an unprecedented boom period. And by no means does this mean just the U.S.-Mexico border. This idea of hardened militarized borders is now becoming a global phenomenon. I believe there's been 70 militarized or securitized borders. There are 70 securitized borders in the world, two-thirds of which were built after 2001. So this is this sort of, like, creating these militarized border zones is that weren't there before. Like, the idea that there was once a time, like, you know, this kind of the Trumpian way of saying, make America safe again, you know, this idea at one time there was these strong borders is simply not true. Hardened militarized borders are a very new phenomenon. You know, for most, you know, most of history, there was borders, you know, are very porous, and people passed through and went back and forth.
Yeah,
in the last 20 years, especially the last 10 years, of this upsurge of militarized borders throughout the world, it has driven these markets, and so the market gets driven, and then the market will drive this, you know, the kind of private enterprise will say, you have to get this on the border, you know, so it's kind of a dance between the two.
Todd, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
You're welcome.
My guest has been Todd Miller. His latest article is No Need to Build the Donald's Wall. It's Built. Trump's America Already Exists on the Border. Todd, thank you again so much.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Porchland Underground Graduate School. Classes that begin in September include The Problem with Privilege, Direct Action Organizing, and Decoding Plants, Seeing Urban Flora with New Eyes. Portland Underground Graduate School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, future classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tony Ozier and the Doodoo Funk All-Stars are teaming up with Cable Community Radio and Audio Globe for another installment of the Dookie Jam. That's September 1st at 10 p.m. at Dante's at 350 West Burnside in downtown Portland. Audio Globe is an audiovisual recording company that specializes in high-fidelity capture and streaming services, providing global reach to regional and national artists on audioglobe.com. The Dookie Jam brings together some of the region's best funk, soul, rock, R&B, and jazz musicians to jam one night a month live at Dante's. The Dookie Jam is happening September 1st, 10 p.m., and we'll be streaming live on KBOO.FM and AudioGlobe.com.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Fifth Monday Labor Radio. This is Michael Morrow. My usual partner is not here. Lane is on vacation. She spent a while in Europe and is now taking care of Mom in the Bend area. But she will rejoin me for our next Fifth Monday, which is going to be on Halloween, October 31st. We have a guest in studio and an interesting show coming up. We'll be talking about TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, with respect to how it, as did NAFTA, is having an effect on unions and is to some degree pitting unions against each other. We'll be discussing that. But before we